It's a company of 15 male dancers who are very, very obsessed with the old world type of ballet. At the same time, they're also pretty much stand-up comedians.
I really wanted to show this part of my country and this extraordinary woman that inspired me.
There's nothing more boring than to just have somebody with a paintbrush at a canvas. It doesn't tell you why and how they paint those strokes or those subject matters. Frida Kahlo painted her own life.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. America's family doctors prescribe healthy laws for queer families, the Trucks parody prima ballerinas while challenging notions of masculinity, and Salma illuminates the life of revolutionary bisexual Mexican artist activist Frida. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 19th, 2002. The American Academy of Family Physicians this week adopted resolutions in support of gays and lesbians' parental rights and of spousal health benefits for same-gender couples. The vote came at the annual meeting of the Congress of Delegates of the Academy, representing well over 93,000 physician and medical student members across the U.S. The resolution on adoptions urged the Academy to establish policy and be supportive of legislation which promotes a safe and nurturing environment, including psychological and legal security, for all children, including those of adoptive parents, regardless of the parent's sexual orientation. Academy President Dr. Warren Jones issued a statement saying, "This policy advocates for the family in all its complexities, and particularly for children." Since 1996, the Academy has held that families can be defined by legal, genetic, or emotional relationships. Earlier this year, the American Academy of Pediatrics also adopted a resolution supporting gay and lesbian parents.
But this week, Britain's House of Lords rejected a move to open adoptions to unmarried couples, both heterosexual and same gender, by a margin of less than 10%. With 5,000 children currently awaiting adoption, the UK's Labour Party government had set a goal of increasing adoptions by 40% by 2005 and had hoped to enact its proposed reforms quickly. In May, the House of Commons approved the Adoption and Children Bill by a ratio of more than 2-1 after adding the Unmarried Couples Clause with an amendment by a Labour backbencher. But in the House of Lords, the Conservative Party quashed that move with a countering amendment of its own, which, after a passionate 3-hour debate, won support from a number of independents and from individuals from all of the parties. The Lords' version of the bill would maintain the status quo, which reserves couples' adoptions for the legally married, but does allow individuals to adopt, including gays and lesbians who live with their partners. The government will continue to try to enact the bill, apparently including unmarried couple adoptions, but the Lords' opposition could keep it ping-ponging between the houses for years.
The Christian Institute's public lobbying against equal adoption rights included distribution of a wallet card similar to those authorizing organ donations, which reads, "In the event of my death, I do not want my children to be adopted by homosexuals." This tactic was denounced by the British Association of Adoption and Fostering. The Conservative Party's traditional opposition to equal treatment of gays and lesbians came despite the party's annual conference last week taking a softer line on the primacy of marriage. That opposition, which had long been spearheaded in the Lords by the late Baroness Janet Young, this time was led by Lady O'Cathane, who said Young had asked her to do so just 12 hours before her death.
Britain's Conservative Party has been steadily weakening in the polls, and all three leading parties appear to be losing ground at the local level as more municipalities gain the right to directly elect their mayors. This week, gay activist Mike Wolfe became the first directly elected mayor of Stoke-on-Trent, narrowly beating out a Labour member of Parliament. But while Wolfe proclaims multiculturalism as a strength of the city, the candidate for the far-right British National Party came in third with nearly one-fifth of the vote.
Britain has granted asylum to two gay men fleeing homophobic violence in Jamaica, it was revealed this week. They presented evidence of anti-gay threats, machete attacks, and murders in a country where homosexual acts are punishable by up to 10 years imprisonment at hard labor. They are among the first gays to win UK asylum since a 1999 ruling qualified so-called particular social groups for refugee status. Britain's Home Office said that Jamaican gays could be eligible for asylum if they could prove their government was failing to provide adequate protection. Another Jamaican gay has been granted a special disposition to stay in the UK, while at least seven more have requests for asylum now in process. One of those says his last two partners were both killed by gay bashers, one of them inside a church. The BBC has suggested that hundreds of Caribbean gays and lesbians may be relocating to Britain to escape abuse in their homelands.
Openly gay Paris Mayor Bertrand Delanoë continues to recover from a known homophobe's assassination attempt 2 weeks ago. Delanoë was able to leave the hospital this week, although it will be at least a week more before he can return to work.
Openly gay Netherlands political hopeful Pim Fortuyn died from an assassin's bullet in May, and now pundits are declaring the political death of his LPF party, Pim Fortuyn's List. The national elections held 9 days after his death gave LPF 26 seats in the parliament and a share of national rulership in coalition with the Christian Democrats and the VVD. But after just shy of 3 months, that uneasy coalition dissolved this week, its fallen government becoming the Netherlands' shortest-lived administration since 1939. New elections will probably be held in January, and polls suggest that LPF will come out of them with only 4 seats in parliament, leaving its former coalition partners in a position to easily rule without it. Already, LPF, which had held 4 of the 14 cabinet posts, has only 2 in the interim cabinet of the caretaker government led by the CDA. Ironically, as the media proclaim the death of the LPF, the young party's official founding ceremony is being held this weekend.
Activist Dr. Uzi Evans' new role as Israel's first openly gay member of the Knesset has led the House committee chair to propose full spousal benefits for his partner. Labor MK Yossi Katz called anything less unacceptable discrimination, noting the House had not been forced to deal with the issue until now. Although a contentious debate is expected, Katz hoped the proposal would serve as an example to the nation's other employers.
Taiwan's president, Chen Shui-bian, this week declared that his government will eradicate discrimination based on sex or sexual preference. Chen was speaking to an international seminar on human rights.
But while saying she opposed all forms of discrimination, Italy's Minister for Equal Opportunities dashed hopes for legal recognition of same-gender couples in an interview with the gay.it website. Minister Stefano Prestigiacomo said, "It is not part of this government's plan to allow for marriage between gay couples. Today, gay couples do not have the same rights as married couples, nor do they have the same responsibilities. I don't think the family concept can be changed, as it is institutionally understood and a norm." She also rejected adoption rights for gays and lesbians. Her remarks came in the midst of numerous reports that activist gay couple Alessio De Giorgi and Christian Panicucci will be contracting a French Pact of Civil Solidarity at the French Embassy in Rome in the coming week. The so-called PACS carries many legal rights in France, but Italy's Minister for Parliamentary Relations, Carlo Giovanardi, told the Italian Parliament this week that it is not a marriage, but just an administrative act which has no legal effect or relevance in our legal system.
South African lesbian couple Marie Fourie and Cecilia Bontuis hoped to be able to win legal marriage this week, but instead they saw their lawsuit dismissed by the Pretoria High Court. Before Judge Pierre Roux made his ruling, he had decided that as presented, their brief could not be considered as a test case for all same-gender couples, but only narrowly as to whether the couple should be given a marriage license. He ultimately declared the matter to be a constitutional issue in which he was not prepared to exercise his own discretion, while noting that current law restricts marriage to a man and a woman. Although disappointed, the couple intend to continue to pursue their legal case. South Africa's Lesbian and Gay Equality Project, which agrees that the nation's constitutional guarantee of equal status for gays and lesbians should grant full marriage rights, was admitted as a friend of the court in the case.
It's generally believed that Alexander the Great was gay, but now some historians have suggested that his father, King Philip II of Macedonia, was bisexual and ultimately assassinated by his jealous male lover, Pausanias. The idea was hotly debated at a scholarly international conference in Macedonia, and dozens of locals, insulted by the suggestion, staged an angry protest.
And finally, scaling new heights to promote the upcoming gay games, 22 drag queens climbed to the top of the famous Sydney Harbour Bridge this week to unfurl a logo banner at the summit. Although they turned out in glitter and sequins before beginning their trek, they were required to don jumpsuits and to trade their high heels for sneakers. Most had been up all the previous night at a Sydney Mardi Gras fundraiser, and as a result, two more were dropped from the event when they badly flunked a breathalyzer test.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 19th, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Can the life of a woman who was one of the most controversial sexual revolutionaries of her day be successfully captured on film? The women behind Frida answer affirmatively.
I have something important to discuss with you.
Later in the program.
Lads do football or boxing or wrestling, not friggin' ballet.
I was dancing when I was 12. I was dancing when I was 12. I was dancing when I was out.
If you think they must be just kidding, you'd only be half right about the world-famous Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo. When the globe-hopping all-male and currently all-gay dance troupe tiptoed through Brisbane, Australia recently, This Way Out's John Frame was on point, chatting with artistic director Tori Dobrin about the serious and the silly appeal of the trocs.
I'm not a ballet critic, okay, and from what I've read, though, the description is, if you love ballet, you'll love the trocs. If you hate the ballet, you'll love them even more. I totally agree with that. The great thing about Trocadero is that it really can engage any audience, from a gay audience to even an audience filled with children. So that's a pretty big stretch for a theater group to appeal to, both those kinds of groups. So it's a good show.
And you're not going for lowest common denominator at all with this. What I see in the performance, you see strength, agility, poise, beauty, and certainly like incredible skill in ballet. These people are real dancers. They're great dancers.
Yeah, that's exactly. You've hit it right on the nail. I mean, poise is a really good thing to have. Everyone should have that at all times. And we really do try to cultivate those things. And I think the audience really appreciates it.
Hamming it up is another major aspect of the trocs, obviously, and you're doing the brief performance, The Dying Swan, and the taking of applause and encouraging the audience actually goes longer than the dance itself.
How did you know that? But it's true, yeah. The actual music time is 3 minutes and the actual bows are verging on 4 minutes. But, you know, we're not doing it just to ham, we're actually parroting the great ballerinas of the olden days. I mean, I went to see Maya Plisetskaya in New York, do her one of her farewell tours, and she bowed for 20 minutes. And it was unbelievably wonderful and engaging to watch this great artist manipulate the audience through her ability to shine. It was inspiring.
You play with the protocols of ballet, and especially with the respect that's demanded by the prima ballerina.
Well, the members of Ballet Trocadero are all very, very good ballet dancers, and they all tend to be ballet dancers that are very, very obsessed with the old world type of ballet. You really wouldn't be attracted to Ballet Trocadero unless you had that old world feeling about your art, which they have all worked really hard for. At the same time, they're also pretty much stand-up comedians. I mean, we really do attract the comedians of the dance world. There isn't a really big arena for someone who's very funny in the dance world because the dance is so serious. So we have the really good combination of both, and that's what helps the company with its success and being interesting for the audience.
Last year at the Energex Festival, we had the Sydney Dance Company presenting a performance called Mythologia, which was very high on macho. But machismo was the ultimate thing. The pictures of the dancers were studying the definition of the muscles, etc., and all the poses were really strong and aggressive. Stark contrast to the Trocadero.
Well, not really. The company is not trying actually to emulate females. It's a company of 15 male dancers who are, and however you want to define the word male, but the male dancer in ballet is really known for an aggressive attack, and that's how we try to approach these roles. So just because we're in a tutu doesn't mean that we're not male, and doesn't mean that we're not expressing different kinds of masculinity. And that masculinity can be very wide range.
I like there's one fleeting moment in a performance on the DVD where one of the dancers just briefly pulls a bodybuilding pose where it's displaying lats, and it's only for a half second, but it's really surprising.
You know, the guys are really free to express themselves in a lot of in a wide variety of ways, so that the audience will see a lot of different characterizations out there. We really want a lot of different people expressing themselves how they truly are, and that's an important part for keeping the company fresh and the audience also interested in what they're doing, because you see such a variety of people.
Are more young men looking toward the Trocs then as being where their career is going? Because you have young men as part of the Trocs.
Yeah, it's when I joined in 1980, we were basically an older crowd, thinking of people who were finishing up their career, you know, who had a nice time and it was great, and maybe got tired of the grind and wanted to start having some fun. And that's really, I guess, until the early 90s, I guess, or something like that. That's really was the case. But in the 90s, we started really attracting guys who were just out of their own ballet academies. And that was kind of surprising to us old timers, because that hadn't been the way it had been in the past. But I think it goes to show you that the society has changed so much that something that wasn't deemed even acceptable for a dancer when I joined in 1980, and I was told, don't join, you're going to ruin your career, in the early 90s became acceptable for a young dancer, acceptable career choice. I think that just goes to show you how in 20 years the whole world is moving in the right direction. We're not there yet, but moving in the right direction.
Certainly. Did you find it empowering to see a film like Billy Elliot become so successful too, suggesting that you can be young and dance, young and gay?
Well, what was even more impressive about Billy Elliot to me was that this guy had a dream and he acted on his dream. And I think that's the important thing. It's really important to find your dream and just keep going. I think that was the good message. And it's certainly, to find expression as a gay person is very, very important. Absolutely. So I thought it was a great film. It was inspirational.
Very good. Earlier this year in Sydney, there was a man, and this made the papers in Brisbane as well, a male dancer came out and did a press release saying, I'm heterosexual and proud of it, and I'm a dancer. It's a surprise that they would use that sort of terminology and need to actually state you can be heterosexual and a male dancer.
I'm not sure what to say about that. I mean, sounds like something he didn't necessarily need to do. Why did he do it? I mean, Martina Navratilova is a great tennis player. She's not a great lesbian tennis player. That she happens to be lesbian is fabulous. But she is a tennis player in her professional life. And for us in the gay community, she is a great role model. So I don't know why this heterosexual would have to advertise the idea that he is heterosexual. I mean, we're all in this together, straight or otherwise.
That was Tori Dobrin, Artistic Director of Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo, talking with our John Frame in Brisbane, Australia. The Trocs and Evening With, Volume 2, was released on DVD in July. For more information online, including a complete list of tour dates, check out their website at www.trocadero.org.
This is Armistead Maupin, author of Tales of the City, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Over the last 10 years, everyone from Jennifer Lopez to Madonna has announced plans to bring the life of bisexual Mexican artist Frida Kahlo to the big screen. Thanks to the persistence of Mexico-born producer-actress Salma Hayek, Frida is finally arriving at multiplexes across North America this week. Our Steve Pride has a preview and talks with Hayek and director Julie Taymor about that remarkable political activist and artist.
Señor Rivera.
Who are you? What do you want?
I have something important to discuss with you.
Okay, come on up here.
No, you come down.
Mexican artist Frida Kahlo was born on July 6, 1907. Her amazing life included polio, a broken back, a miscarriage, the loss of a leg, two marriages to muralist Diego Rivera, and countless love affairs with both men and women.
Hey, listen, if you think I'm going to sleep with you just because you've taken me under your wing, you're wrong.
I was painting murals and womanizing in peace when you came along.
Now this life has been brought to the screen in a film called Frida, starring Salma Hayek.
This was a story that was important for me to tell. I think it's a story that shows Mexico in a light that it's never seen before. You know, at this particular period of time that Frida Lipton was there, Mexico was the nucleus for a lot of sophisticated minds that were kicked out of their country because they were threatening in some way to their countries. And they came and found refuge in Mexico. So it was a bohemian atmosphere of a group of people that were eager to change the world and have new ideas. And I don't think people is often seen in this way. And I really wanted to show this part of my country and this extraordinary woman that inspired me because of her courage to be unique. Always, in everything she did.
Frida Kahlo began to paint in 1925 while recovering from a streetcar accident that left her permanently disabled and in pain for most of her life. Her work was personal and primitive.
Frida had a style of painting. She did this painting that nobody liked. It was not that she didn't pursue it, nobody liked it. And at the time, it was the time of the muralists. And all these people were painting the reality of the country and the walls of the country, and they were social big concepts. And Frida was making these little, very personal portraits. And she was never influenced by what was going on out there. She never tried to paint things that people would like and buy. She never tried to paint too much that she would become more popular. She painted when she felt like it. She painted what she felt like it. A couple of times she did paint to try to survive. When she got a divorce from Diego in 1940, this is the period of time where she painted the most, 1940 to 1941. And she really wanted to be financially independent from Diego. She was not. She really struggled. She didn't really sell that many. And she did also some portraits of other people. Not just anyone, but people that she did care for, trying to achieve this financial. But she was never terribly aggressive because she was never really ready to compromise what she did. And the only person that really understood how genius she was Diego. And when Diego dies, he leaves a document that says that the house that they lived in should become the Frida Kahlo Museum. And it is thanks to Diego that today Frida is who she is, because otherwise she would have never even had a museum. And now this museum is very, very popular in Mexico.
In 1953, when Frida Kahlo had her first solo exhibition in Mexico, a local critic wrote, "It is impossible to separate the life and work of this extraordinary person. Her paintings are her biography." In making the film, director Julie Taymor used this to her advantage.
Unlike many other artist stories, where you don't know why a person paints a painting, you really can't tell me why someone goes into an abstraction like Pollock or why the sunflowers are painted by, except that they're pretty, by Van Gogh, Frida Kahlo painted her own life. So there was something easier, quite honestly, about that, because you could see the moments where the paintings must have come into fruition in her mind. So I went through all of the paintings and I picked 8 or 9 that I thought would be great moments to almost end a chapter of her life or begin the next one, like the wedding portrait or the cropped hair. And because you can see in the history, you can see in her story, You can see that that happened after Diego had an affair with her sister Christina and she cut her hair. I could find the physical landscape to show the mental, interior landscape of what was going on. And I thought, there's nothing more boring than to just have somebody with a paintbrush at a canvas. It doesn't tell you why and how they paint those strokes or those subject matters. So though you see that occasionally, it's not the dominant experience of her as an artist. The experience of Frida as an artist, to see her imagination opening up. And you understand it because you understand the environment from which this idea sprung. And later I figured if I could put those pieces together in the sophisticated, naive style of Frida, through animation, through hand-painted animation, through puppet animation, when you finally see the paintings, the audience maybe would say, oh, I understand why she painted her Tijuana dress in the middle of New York City skyline. And it's not just a painting. You go back to the story that made this painting happen.
Although the film focuses on Frida's relationship with her husband, it doesn't shy away from her bisexuality.
You know, when you take a character, you have to embrace it for everything that she was. And that is a very important part of who she was. It would be a betrayal not to include that, because she had meaningful relationships with women. We cannot include them in the movie because it's a two-hour movie. And again, we have to focus on one line, on the love story. It's only 2 hours, it's impossible, you know. But I think they were terribly important.
Frida Kahlo has become a feminist icon, so it's appropriate that women were the driving force in bringing her story to the screen.
This is the first time where I think being a woman had an effect with Salma, with the other women involved, in telling the story. I hired a female. We had Sarah Green. We had a line producer, our producer. There were many women involved. At first, we thought it was going to be a problem in Mexico, quite the opposite. They all said, oh, it's much better working with women. They loved working with us. And it was a very charged feminine environment, equal, but I think it's a good thing for Frida.
And according to Salma Hayek,
what goes through my mind is that nothing would make Frida happier than through telling her story to have, for the first time, a female director win an Oscar.
Frida Kahlo died on July 13, 1954. Although she painted in obscurity during much of her life, in death, her reputation as a painter has eclipsed that of her famous husband. Frida is a Miramax release directed by Julie Taymor, starring Salma Hayek, Alfred Molina, Jeffrey Rush, Antonio Banderas, Ashley Judd, and Edward Norton. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Salías del templo un día, llorona, cuando al pasar yo te...
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambage, Rex Walkner, John Frame, and Steve Pride contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Arcus Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks very much for listening on MVS Radio Amsterdam, the Netherlands, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, WRSU New Brunswick, New Jersey, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.